From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver is convicted on 7 counts of corruption. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Silver's conviction and the governor and legislative leaders downplaying efforts for new reforms. And some are rethinking how to achieve the governor's new renewable energy goal. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo and the current legislative leaders have downplayed efforts for new reforms in Albany following the conviction this week of the former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver on 7 counts of corruption. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Former Assembly Speaker Silver is now facing up to 20 years in prison for illegally gaining millions of dollars through his outside employment. The former Senate leader, Dean Skelos, is in the midst of another federal corruption trial. He's accused of misusing his influence to gain jobs and money for his son. Editorial pages from New York City to Buffalo are calling for reform measures, and good government groups say Governor Cuomo, who came into office vowing to win back the public trust, may find his very legacy in jeopardy. But so far, Cuomo has not championed the issue. He speaks of it only when reporters ask him, as in this brief question-and-answer session one day after the Silver verdict.
I think in the trial, justice was done. The process ran its course, and the jury was clear.
The governor then pinned the blame squarely back on the former Assembly Speaker himself, saying that Silver knew what the laws were and broke them anyway.
The problem with the Sheldon Silver situation was not that we didn't have a law. We had a law. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been convicted. It's that he thought he was going to get away with it. And he thought that he could violate the law. And that's the lesson that I think people need to heed. If you violate the law, you will get caught.
Silver was convicted of violating federal laws, not state laws, on corruption. Critics say the state laws are far looser when it comes to ethical rules. In the wake of the twin trials of the former legislative leaders, there have been calls for a full-time legislature to end potential conflicts that have led to the indictments and convictions. Cuomo says he's open to that idea.
I am intrigued by the full-time legislature because that would end the conflict of interest. Where legislators always get into trouble, it's always the same thing. It's in their outside income. And are they getting paid as a legislator, or are they getting paid as an attorney, or as a dentist, or as a consultant?
But the governor concedes it's controversial because under the state's constitution, the Senate and Assembly are technically part-time jobs, paying just under $80,000 a year. And Cuomo blames the state Senate for lack of action to convert the legislature to full-time status, saying there's no appetite for it. Senate leader John Flanagan, who took over for Skelos in May, confirms that, saying he believes in the concept of a citizen legislature.
I want people with a depth of background, a different type of experience. I think it's useful to have people from varying walks of life. And I don't believe that anyone should be stymied in their efforts to do good things on behalf of their family.
Cuomo argues that the legislature already approved stricter disclosure rules for outside income in the state budget earlier this year. He says he'd like to wait and see how that turns out first. Cuomo says he will pursue new ethics changes when the legislature reconvenes in January, but he did not detail what they might be. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. It doesn't get any more interesting than the verdict in the Sheldon Silver trial, Alan. Wow. Guilty on all seven counts, essentially feathering his own nest with $5 million illegally. And we have Dean Skelos also on trial. We'll see what happens with him. But your reaction to the trial and if this means reform in New York?
Well, first of all, you know that Preet Bharara, who is the federal prosecutor, decided that he was going to prosecute on the theft of honest services and other things, and brought all of these charges against Sheldon Silver. What happened here was that there was an absolute and explicit Supreme Court finding that you had to prove quid pro quo, in other words, bribery. You had to prove that somebody said that they would do something explicitly on a telephone, on a wiretap, in another place. It turns out that Bharara has really won the day by saying, all right, if you take the pattern, you'll see that this really does constitute illegal activity. And by doing that, he moved the line. And by doing that, Silver gets convicted. Now, of course, there's going to be a lot of appeals here. I guarantee that. But in fact, it is Bharara who won the day and won big. Now, if he wins on the second major trial, which is Dean Skelos, the former majority leader in the state Senate, two of the three men in the room will have been dispatched. And that is going to say to Bharara, I suspect, okay, so if jurors are being able to convict people based on this kind of evidence, then the sky is really the limit, because the legislature operates that way. In fact, that was the Silver defense, which was, this is what goes on. This is the way we do business here in Albany. Well, once that myth is dispelled, then anything can happen.
So let's move to some of the other comments about the Silver verdict, like New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. There are only two paths forward, he said, more scandals, more prosecutions, and the further erosion of public confidence, or real transformational reform that deters and actually prevents corruption in the first place.
Well, that's right. The one thing that Preet Bharara has shown is that by having these two guys, Skelos and Silver, put on trial with the prospect of spending years in prison, he has raised a red flag. You know, when I grew up on Fire Island, when the red flag went up on the beach, it meant you had to stay out of the water. So, yes, he's exactly right. Schneiderman is exactly right. Either there will be continual picking of some of the miscreants who are doing bad things and making public examples of them, or the legislature has a choice of turning around and saying, we're going to pass rules and laws which prohibit this kind of behavior and which make it much easier to find. And if they do that, and we have been calling for them to do that for years and years, they may find themselves protecting themselves, because that calls off, maybe in their minds, Bharara from looking for criminal complaint as opposed to overall reform. And if I were them, that's exactly what I would do. But you know, they turned around after Speaker Silver fell, and who did they elect? They elected the boss of the Bronx, Carl Hasty. Some people call him Boss Hasty. He goes around. The first thing they find is that he's double charging the state for the use of his, for the repair of his cars, where there's smoke, there's fire. Come on now, folks. If they are meaningful, there are a group of reformers now in the assembly who are younger people who are trying to make their reputations by creating ethical change. But if, in fact, the good, quote, people in the legislature are going to elect people of, well, let us just say, questionable ethics to be their leaders, then nothing has changed.
Governor Cuomo continues to unveil programs that release money toward what some might say are more liberal causes, like HIV this week. We also saw minimum wage reform and other programs that he's introduced that, well, seem to make him more of a Democrat than ever.
Well, more of a traditional Democrat, and I think that that's what we see with Governor Cuomo now. When he became governor, he promised that the old Andrew would disappear, you know, the combative Andrew, and that we would get the new model, and it would be kinder and gentler. And then as he went into his time in office, we found him doing exactly the opposite, picking on the teachers, picking on the mayor of New York, and a combative guy, and his numbers kept going down. All of a sudden, he lost some of the people he was surrounded with. They went on to other things. Who knows if they were pushed or pulled. And we got another version of Cuomo. You know, it was version X1. And what that version was the traditional Hubert Humphrey type model Democrat, far less in the news for having started fights except with the mayor of New York. And for all of these things, which are the kinds of things that traditional Democrats are for. And he's looking better. And my bet is that his numbers are going to stabilize and even increase.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Charton. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Governor Andrew Cuomo's goal of generating half of New York's electricity from renewable sources by 2030 has apparently caused some rethinking on how to accomplish that goal. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
In June, the Cuomo administration finalized the state energy plan, which established specific clean energy goals and a framework on how New York's energy is to be produced, distributed, and consumed. The plan calls for cutting greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2030 from 1990 levels, lowering energy consumption in buildings 23% from 2012 levels, and generating half the state's electricity from solar, wind, hydropower, and biomass by 2030. Cuomo is expected to make reducing emissions and boosting green energy a focus of his State of the State address in January. His administration announced Monday that it will task the state's Public Service Commission with enforcing the 50% target. Approximately a quarter of the state's power now comes from renewable sources. The plan includes a requirement that utility companies look to carbon-free sources when buying power and opens the door for New York's nuclear power plants to play a role in supplying some of that carbon-free power. Governor Cuomo had been critical of nuclear power, but published reports indicate his plan would give utilities 15 years to use nuclear energy as a source of carbon-free power to foster development of the renewable industry. Some environmentalists have praised Cuomo's efforts. Others have reservations. Mark Dunlay is co-coordinator of the 100% Renewable Now New York campaign.
Well, Governor Cuomo previously had been calling to shut down the Indian Point nuclear power plant, which poses a real security threat to the New York City environment. But he has been overly concerned about trying to protect the jobs in upstate communities that are provided both by some of the older nuclear plants and coal plants. And so therefore what he is really was announcing yesterday was that he wants the state to increase subsidies for nuclear power plants in order to help preserve the jobs in upstate New York. What we've been trying to educate him that if he wants to really create jobs, he should support a transition to 100% renewable energy as quickly as possible, because that creates far more jobs than continuing to prop up both old nuclear plants and coal plants, which he's also spending hundreds of millions of dollars to keep open in New York State.
Dunlay warns that nuclear power is far from carbon-free.
You have to build the plant, and then you have to mine particularly the uranium that powers the plant. You have to transport the uranium to the site, and then you have to decommission the power plant, which is often more expensive than building the plant itself. All those things, when you look at the life cycle of the plant, actually nuclear power plants have a fairly significant carbon footprint.
Dunlay's group is urging the governor to further the cause of renewable energy by looking to solar and offshore wind instead of relying on nuclear. Nonetheless, former Vice President Al Gore hails Cuomo's announcement as a terrific and bold move that will help build essential momentum ahead of the climate talks in Paris. In reality, it's proven difficult for the state to change horses when it comes to the power supply. Growing demand for electricity in Westchester and New York City is having an impact on some Hudson Valley counties. Several power proposals have been considered, including stringing new high transmission lines critics fear would impart major environmental and visual impacts on many natural and some historic sites. Some of the lines proposed under New York's Energy Highway Initiative could be strung as high as 120 feet across seven counties. Scenic Hudson President Ned Sullivan suggests the utility industry sees opportunities in New York to make profit by building to increase capacity.
Building $1.2 billion worth of new transmission capacity to bring power from old coal-fired power plants in central and upstate New York that are dirtier and that are going to have more adverse air quality impacts is the wrong way to go.
The PSC did not have a representative available for comment. The Cuomo administration did not respond to a request for comment. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Almost exactly 6 months after two convicted murderers broke out of a prison in far northern New York, the State Assembly Standing Committee on Correction held a hearing in Albany this week to review the oversight of corrections. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
Following the June escape of two prisoners from the Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora, a number of systemic problems were exposed. They include allegations of guard-on-inmate violence, lack of access by independent investigators, and a culture of silence. Also this year, it was determined the death of an inmate in Fishkill was due to a beating by corrections guards. Committee on Correction Chair Daniel O'Donnell, a Manhattan Democrat, called the hearing to determine New York's oversight methodology, if it is efficient and effective, and whether there are potential models that would make it more effective. The chair planned to hear from the State Commissioner of Corrections and receive an update from the Inspector General on her ongoing investigation into the Clinton Correctional Facility breakout. Both declined to appear. O'Donnell was not pleased.
They have informed me that in light of the fact that the investigation about the escape in Clinton is being pursued by the IG and that the U.S. attorney is investigating the murder at Fishkill, that they would be unable to speak to those two issues while the investigations are pending. I accept that explanation. However, both will be brought back before us in the future by subpoena, if necessary, to address issues regarding oversight of the state correctional system.
A number of experts did appear before the panel. Prisoners Legal Services Executive Director Karen Murtaugh discussed reports of prisoner abuse following the Clinton correctional escape. She outlined a series of problems and said actions must be taken to improve oversight and transparency throughout the correction system.
There is no paper trail. There are no videos. There's no photographs. We haven't been able to find any medical records. Assuming any of this happened, none of the procedures that are set forth in DOC's regulations and directives were followed.
The committee brought in corrections ombudsmen and consultants from outside of New York, looking at prison systems in the United Kingdom and Indiana for perspective. Both emphasized the need for unfettered access to prisons by independent investigators. Attorney Jonathan Moore, representing the family of Samuel Harrell, the inmate killed by guards at the Fishkill Correctional Facility, detailed his investigation and offered a number of recommendations.
Guards who commit violence should be disciplined. There is a need for a more effective system of video surveillance within the prison system. There has been some mention of body cameras. We also believe that DOCs must end the overuse of solitary confinement. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't say that DOCs needs to do more to eliminate racial bias by guards.
The hearing was adjourned to an undetermined date after the Inspector General issues her report on Dannemora.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Food insecurity affects millions of Americans. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says 15.3 million American children under age 18 lived in food insecure homes in 2014. It's a major problem with many causes, and solutions have been hard to come by. But there's a new cafe in one of Albany's poorest neighborhoods that's aiming to bring a community together to fight childhood hunger and food insecurity. The Legislative Gazette's Jessica Blaustein Marshall took a look inside the unique South End Children's Cafe.
At the hottest new restaurant in Albany's South End, the lights are low, but the ambiance is lively. The tables are dressed with fresh linen. The decor is DIY trendy. A glittering chandelier made from silverware and wire catches the light as dozens of patrons enjoy meals made with organic, local ingredients.
My name is Sir John. Gotta keep it real, John. I never get a cover rate at this Sir John, yo!
Sir John is tonight's MC. He's six.
Thanks for the people that serve the food.
Thanks for the people that serve the food.
Amen.
Thank you, Sir John.
I gotta see the help.
This is what you're likely to encounter on a given night at the South End Children's Cafe. Good food, good company, and no bill. Dinner is free. Albany County resident Tracy Killar whipped up the idea for the cafe, which serves dinner to about 20 kids and their families 5 nights a week.
So I hope that grows and grows. We might have to add another seating, which will be okay. We'll just, you know, go with the flow and just feed as many people as we can.
It opened at the beginning of November in a space inside the Reigning Life Family Church. The church also lends them its commercial kitchen and pantry storage space. Killar, who's been running community programs in the neighborhood since 2000, says she was inspired by Jon Bon Jovi's Soul Kitchen Community Cafe in New Jersey, where patrons pay what they can or volunteer to help run it.
It's about, you know, he says things like hope is delicious, or, you know, it's about building community and just bringing people together through the simple act of breaking bread.
Right now, the cafe relies entirely on volunteers and food donations to operate. Killar says they have plans to apply for grants and to hold future fundraisers, but they're taking the first few weeks to learn what works best for the children and community.
We really just want to introduce healthy alternatives slowly. Sometimes the kids will ask for salt, and I just say, we don't have any salt here. And I don't say, well, these are all the reasons why salt is not good for you, because I just want to create a relationship with the kids and, you know, have them feel a part of the cafe and maybe take ownership in the cafe so that they feel like this is theirs.
They make the best food in here.
Oh, yeah? What are we having for dinner tonight?
Applesauce, noodles, and pork chops.
That's 8-year-old Zaire. He's one of the patrons. He also volunteers as one of the servers. He comes to the cafe once a week. Tonight, his mother, LaStacia, joined him for dinner.
It helps out. I mean, the fact that it's free, it's a blessing. You know, times are hard nowadays, so it's a great, great program, and I really appreciate the fact that she has it open for the kids and the community.
Zaire hurries away, intent on delivering a message to the kitchen about the status of things in the dining room. In the kitchen, a group of adult volunteers gathers around a large prep table. They're getting briefed on how to plate tonight's dinner, which was donated by a local restaurant.
We live in Albany. Actually, I live right around the
corner. Albany resident Alyssa Hardy is the ringleader of today's volunteer group. She gathered seven of her friends to come in after she learned about the cafe on Facebook.
Super nice. Like, did you look in the cafe yet? It's like so nice. It's an awesome thing to do.
Volunteers can make tax-exempt donations of food and supplies. Some have donated subscriptions to local farm shares. Volunteers can also help in the kitchen and with serving, or they can come to hang out with the kids and help with homework. Back in the dining room, the kids are gearing up for dessert. 20-year-old Marquise Hodge Humphreys hangs out toward the back of the cafe, surveying the scene. He grew up in the South End, has struggled at times with food insecurity, but now serves on the cafe's advisory board.
Myself and everybody I knew growing up struggled just getting food and having food. I remember nights going to bed hungry. I remember some nights I would hear about kids stealing from the store, from various places, just because they had nothing to eat or they didn't have the support when there was no food.
Marquise is now studying liberal arts at Schenectady County Community College, and he's hoping to continue his work with the cafe.
Yeah, I think this is a great place to be for the community. It's an amazing first step in an amazing direction.
The South End Children's Cafe has two seatings every weeknight at 5 and 5:30. You can find more information at WAMC.org. In Albany's South End, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1549. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.